I had trouble finding that. All right. Welcome, everybody, to the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast here on the Everything Unscripted Podcast Network. I am your host tonight, Doug Hummer. Daniel, of course, still recovering from a dental procedure, so he's taking another night off. But joining me on this episode, we have Eric.
What else?
And Stevie's here.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. So, all right, so tonight, because Halloween is 2 days away, we are going to be covering the 1991 WCW Halloween Havoc. This, of course, took place October 27th, 1991, so the 30th anniversary was just a couple of days ago.
Wednesday.
It was on Wednesday. Yeah. It was took place at the UTC Arena in Chattanooga, Tennessee. 8,900 people attended. And
wow.
This event basically is known for the Chamber of Horrors. The cage match, it was a 4-on-4 cage match. And the way you win is to basically to electrocute your opponent. But before we get too far into that, because I basically almost forgot what we were doing here, get some plugs out of the way. Listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, every Wednesday night, mixer.com/dirtsheetdudes. They can be found on all major podcast platforms. Usually around 10:15, 10:20-ish Eastern time.
That's right.
And then tomorrow night will be Hollywood Hangout, Boxman. What's Boxman doing tomorrow night, Eric?
I forget. Something about TV shows or something. I forget.
All right. So just tune in tomorrow night for whatever, because Eric doesn't pay attention. So, all right. So make sure you listen to that. All right. Join us Friday night, every Friday night, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Next week will be the return of Settle It in the Ring. I'll be going up against two mystery opponents that Daniel has yet to reveal. In 2 weeks, on November the 12th, we'll be covering WWF Survivor Series 1995 with Barry Horowitz. So you got those coming up. Listen to us tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Eastern time here on blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted for Unscripted Unlimited. Tomorrow night's going to be a special show. Tomorrow night, you know, we've done fantasy warfare with wrestling before. Tomorrow night's going to be fantasy warfare tournament with cartoons. Our first ever 32-tune tournament. I'll try saying that three times fast. Eric, Stevie, and I will be here along with a couple of special guests. My buddy Rick, Daniel's buddy Sean are going to be joining us, and we're basically, it's going to be like fantasy warfare. We're going to decide who moves on to the next round. We're going to have a healthy debate about it, we think. So we got that to look forward to. And then, of course, Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, blogtalkradio.com/everythingunscripted will be Scaredy Cats, Dangle and Mindy. They're finally going to do the Time Jarvis trilogy for Friday the 13th. They've been promising it for weeks now. It's about fucking time they deliver. And then, of course, listen to Eric, Cliniff, and Stevie this upcoming week on the NFL Hard Hit Show. Previewing week 9, reviewing week 8, and then of course listen to mine and Daniel's buddy Sean, or watch or his YouTube channel Elite Diplodoc, and then of course on Twitch you can catch him on Sneaky Fetty. All right, that pretty much does it for the plugs. All right, back to Halloween Havoc now that I get the plugs out of the way. So, obviously, you know, we all watched it this week. Eric, what did you first think of this event when, you know, as you were watching it?
I thought it was pretty old. I mean, obviously it was old school, but I thought it was pretty unique. You had Eric Bischoff in this, vampire suit. He was the only one that was dressed up for Halloween, wasn't he?
No, Missy Hyatt was dressed up like a hooker.
I mean, yeah. He's hot, but Jim Ross and Tony were just dressed as themselves. I thought the event looked, I mean, it didn't look like there was only 89,000, as you said.
8,900.
It looked like a bigger arena than that. Even Smart said the arena was still in Tennessee where he lives. It's still there. So I thought it was a pretty cool event. Cool. It looked like a pretty cool venue.
Stevie, what did you first think of the event when you watched it again?
I mean, it was decent, but it wasn't that popular looking at it, really. Because back then, they were in a rebuilding period after Flair left. So I would say decent from watching it, because I've watched it a few times.
Right. So, like, the thing about this event, and Stevie's right when he says that, you know, they're in a rebuilding period, which they were. You know, Ric Flair had left in early July. They were kind of hurting from the fact that he left. He really didn't give a shit because he could not stand Jim Hurt. And he was just like, he wanted out. He wanted away from him. Can't really blame him. So, you know, he left. And then it basically just kind of, you know, became like they were in that rebuilding period. Like Stevie said, you know, Luger became the champion. And, you know, nothing against Luger. They just had trouble drawing. And it was one of those situations where, you know, Jim Hurd's time was just about up. Because this guy, he had come in early 89. Him and Flair did not get along from the get-go. And he just, and especially here, he was trying to make WCW seem like the WWF. So he was bringing in guys that were kind of fit like that WWF mold, like Van Hammer, like Bill Kazmaier, who we'll talk about later on.
Yeah.
But what made WCW different is the fact that they focused more on the wrestling. They weren't about the bodies. And if they had guys with decent bodies, you know, they at least taught them how to wrestle.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, Jim Hurd felt like, I guess Jim Hurd felt like the only way he could compete with the WWF is to be like them, which really didn't serve him well. All right, so the show opens. Go ahead, Eric.
No, I was going to say that was probably the big mistake he made was trying to be like WWF at the time. He should have just stuck with what he should have stuck with what you said, wrestling, not bringing in so many big guys in like Diesel. I mean, I call him Diesel. But that was Diesel, right?
Oz is Diesel.
But,
Oz is Kevin Nash.
That's what I thought. It looked like. Yeah, it's funny because Diesel and Razor Ramon were both in WCW at 91, and then they left for WWF a year later. A year later?
Well, yeah, Razor was there by you know, June of 92, or June or July of 92, and Nash was there by, you know, June of 93.
Okay. And they both stayed for, what, 2-3 years, and then they came back to WCW?
Yeah, well, Razor was there for a little less than 4 years. Diesel was there for a little less than 3 years.
Yeah, I didn't realize they were both in WCW, early WCW at the time. But I thought Diesel was longer in WF.
Nah.
I mean, yeah.
All right, so we start the show off with them talking about Barry Windham being injured in the parking lot. He gets jumped by Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko. And what was weird was that Barry was supposed to be on the heel team in the Chamber of Horrors match.
Oh, wow.
So the Chamber of Horrors Chamber of Horrors match was supposed to be Elegante, Sting, and the Steiners against Oz, the Diamond Stud, the One Man Gang, and Barry Windham. Well, Vader got brought in to replace Barry Windham in the match. Abdullah the Butcher replaced the One Man Gang, who was actually fired like that day.
Wow.
And they decided that because they were already doing an angle with Cactus and Sting in the first place, that Cactus, who was actually supposed to wrestle Bill Kazmaier later in the show, Cactus and Oz would switch. So Oz would wrestle Bill Kazmaier and Cactus would be in Chamber of Horrors. So, all right, so let's start here with the Chamber of Horrors match. Sting, Elegante, and the Steiner brothers defeated Abdullah the Butcher, Diamond Stud, Cactus Jack, and Big Van Vader. 12 minutes, 33 seconds. The ending came when Cactus Jack pulled the lever, thinking Rick Steiner was in the chair, but it was really Abdullah. Eric, what did you think of this?
The match was unique. I thought it was kind of a clusterfuck at times. Because you had all eight guys in the ring at the same time. You had this machine, that chamber machine there, and then you had that bot. Was it a bot? You would call it a botch at the end with Butcher. Were they supposed to win?
No. All right. So the real botch was the lever was down. Like the lever the lever was supposed to be up on the switch, but the lever was down and the camera caught it. So they they shot it. They shot the fact that the lever was in the wrong place. And Cactus actually went up to fix the lever. He was up there forever. He had to fix the lever, and the camera shot him putting the lever back up. So
what led to this match?
Dusty Rhodes just wanted to do a Halloween gimmick.
Okay. And he just chose these eight guys. I mean, some of these, there's two replacements, but six of the eight were the right people.
Yeah.
The original.
Yeah. No, he figured that, obviously, you know, he likes the Steiner brothers. He likes Sting. He likes Elegante. Barry Windham was always a friend of his. He liked the gang. He always tried to fuck over Oz. These just eight guys, it was just your standard, big baby faces, your main baby faces, which were Elegante, Sting, and the Steiners. They just felt like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do. Elegante, Sting, and the Steiners can get the match over. And because Elegante at the time, they were basically almost done with Elegante's push. Because they were starting to realize that they couldn't really do much with this guy.
So my question is, why did they give up on him? Like, why couldn't they push him?
Because he wasn't really a wrestler. He wasn't made for the wrestling business. Yeah, he was 7'7", and you know, but he couldn't work. He could barely move.
Right.
So, I mean, after a while, you just have to say, fuck it.
Right. Well, if you look at the great Khali, I mean, WWE pushed him. I mean, he was a world champion for a time period.
Yeah, but then afterwards they gave up on him, too.
Oh, they did?
Yeah,
was it like the same reason?
Natalya, okay?
Well,
yeah, I would say they gave up on him.
Okay.
So,
do you think it was for like the same reason like back then when they did to Elegante, or
they did, they realized that they, you know, they only had he had a limited ceiling. He couldn't work.
Okay.
He could barely move. I mean, being big is great, but it's not really going to do much for you.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah.
All right, Stevie, what rating would you give this match?
Well, the rating I would give this match, I'd probably give it like a 6. That'd be the honest rating I would give it.
Right. All right, Eric?
I'd give it a 4.
All right, I'm going to go in the middle of the two of you, and I'm going to give it a 5. So, all right.
It was an okay match. For...
Yeah.
So this is the only Chambers or Harlan.
Yeah, they never did it again. They never did it again.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, after this match, they go back to Eric Bischoff and Mitzi Hyatt, who are interviewing the Young Pistols, who basically turned heel by challenging the Patriots and calling them out, insulting them. Tracy and Steve were baby faces up to that point, and then after this promo, no longer. Then we cut to the next match, the Creatures. Joey Maggs and Johnny Rich, under a mask, taking on the team of PN News and Big Josh. Pian and Josh get the win, 5 minutes, 16 seconds. Eric, what did you think of this?
I thought it was an okay match for what it was. It was a decent tag team match. I mean, I didn't know any of the guys in it, but it was decent.
Yeah. What's funny is that, like, Pian News and Big Josh, like, they really didn't team up that much. As a matter of fact, I think they only teamed up like this one time. It was just basically to get them on the show because these were two other guys that Jim Herd had a lot of faith in.
Right.
You know, and they were, you know, characters. I mean, Big Josh could work. But PN News, you know, he was limited, obviously, from his size. But, I mean, and Josh, you know, was limited, too. I mean, he would... Big Josh, you know, Matt Bourne would obviously become, you know, get a lot of notoriety by becoming Evil Doink, you know, in the WWF in late 92, early 93. But, Stevie, what'd you think of this match?
This is a match that should be on TV, not on a pay-per-view. Were they seriously trying to push, like, Big Josh and PN News as a team, you think?
I don't know if they were trying to push them as a team, because I don't remember them teaming that much. But I do know that, you know, there was a lot of high stock in both News and Josh, especially with PN News, because they felt like the rap gimmick could get over, because they tried to do a Vanilla Ice type thing, except for, you know, it didn't work. He couldn't get over.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
All right, Stevie, what rating would you give this match?
To be perfectly honest, I would give this rating, I'm probably going to give it a 4.
Okay. All right. Eric?
I agree with Bob, Stevie. I'll give it a 4.
All right. I'll give it a 4, too. All right. Next matchup, probably the best wrestled match on the card. Jim Ross said it was going to be the greatest pure scientific wrestling match of that entire show. He was pretty much right. Beautiful Bobby Eaton defeated Terrence Taylor with Alexander York in the corner of the York Foundation. 16 minutes. Eric, what'd you think?
I thought it lived up to the hype. I thought both guys were technically sound in the ring. Bobby Eaton's a legend. Terrence Taylor is never, who was he?
The Red Rooster.
Never heard of him, but I mean, he was pretty good in the ring.
Yeah.
I thought it was a good match.
Terrence Taylor was the Red Rooster in the WWF.
Oh, okay. I know Bobby Eaton's a legend, so.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty good match.
It was, and this is the thing, is that, like, both of these guys of, and what's funny is that, like, once, Dusty Rhodes took over the booking, because Dusty Rhodes, you know, really liked both these guys, and, you know, he obviously really liked Bobby, because Bobby started getting, like, this, you know, mid-card big push, you know, after, you know, the Midnight Express left, or the rest of the Midnight Express left WCW in late 90. And Bobby was kind of just, you know, a lot of people didn't know whether or not Bobby was going to be able to make it on his own, but he did. And
yeah.
Terrence Taylor, the thing about Terrence Taylor is that he was so good in the ring. The problem is that, like, I feel like they really didn't know what to do with him. And they put him with Alexander York, who, by the way, is Terry Runnels. And, the whole York Foundation thing, if they would have used bigger stars, the group would have gotten over. But the problem is that the guys, they made part of the York Foundation. It's just unfortunately, nobody really cared about them.
I've never heard of them until today.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's sad to say, but still. Stevie, what'd you think of this match?
I thought it was a great match. I mean, they kept a good pace and never lost the crowd. And Bob Eaton was coming into his own as a singles competitor. I mean, I thought it was great. I really had nothing bad to say about it.
Right.
Good chemistry in the ring, Kevin.
Yeah, exactly. And this was one of those matches, too, to where, like, there was kind of a storyline that was developing between the two, because, you know, they were having issues in six-man tag matches and regular tag matches. And Bobby had turned down an offer to join the York Foundation. So, like, there was kind of a story there. Stevie, what rating would you give this match?
To be honest, I would give this match, I would say, a 6.
Okay. Eric?
I'll give it an 8.
To be honest with you, I like this match so much, I'm giving it a 9. Because I felt like both guys really did work their ass off. They did 16 minutes. Never lost the crowd, like Stevie said. And, like, it really was a fantastic wrestling match, which is something that WCW should have just stuck to. If they,
yep.
You know, stick to the wrestling, and you'll be just fine.
And that's basically what AEW is trying to do, and what they should stick to when as the years go along, too.
Yeah, well, here's the thing about AEW, and I'm going to agree with what Eric Bischoff said about him. Eric Bischoff said, just shut up and wrestle, because that's what you're good at is wrestling.
Yep.
Tony Khan needs to have his fucking tongue cut out of his mouth. Here's, like, something, and Bischoff, like, you know, when he says, oh, you know, Eric's one to talk, well, Eric's trying to tell you to do the same thing that he didn't do. All right, because
he's trying to give you a bat to bite.
Yeah, it came back to bite Bischoff in the ass. Don't acknowledge WWE. Don't even bring them up. Worry about what the fuck you're doing and just keep putting out a good product.
Exactly.
Because, like, you know, and especially like tonight on Rampage, and I don't know if I'm going to watch it or not. But, like, on Rampage, you're going to get Eddie Kingston and Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, which I'm sure a lot of people, you know, a lot of indie fans want to see.
Yep.
So, like, just, again, like Bischoff said, just shut up and wrestle. If you do that, then, you know, you're going to be fine. So. All right, next matchup, we have Johnny B. Badd with Teddy Long in his corner, defeating Jimmy Jam Garvin of the Freebirds with Michael Hayes in his corner. 8 minutes, 16 seconds. Michael Hayes comes out wearing a sling, basically just to get out of his match that he was supposed to have later in the show with Van Hammer. Eric, what'd you think of this?
I thought it was an all right match. I thought it was kind of boring. I mean, I don't like either guy, so it was okay. I thought, anyway, maybe, wait, how long did it go?
8 minutes and 16 seconds.
Yeah, I thought it was the right amount of time for the match, especially after a long match that just came to be after the Bobby Eaton match. So it was a good match in between the two long matches.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, you can tell when there are certain guys that haven't been around long. Because they're like, they're still trying to get used to stuff. Like Johnny B. Badd, like a lot of the stuff that he did in the ring, like that sunset flip off the top rope, like he completely botched it. In this match, I mean, obviously it would become one of his main finishers later on because he got used to doing it. But you could tell that this is the first time he had ever done that move.
Yeah. So. I think they were both okay in the ring.
Yeah. Jimmy Jam Garvin, you know, was a really good worker, you know, like, 7-8 years before this. I mean, and I think, like, some of the work he did in this match was pretty good. Like, you know, he carried the match as well as he could. But, like, these two could do better. Stevie, what did you think of this match?
I thought the match was, like, slow and awkward. I mean, you know, Johnny B. Badd, he was improving, but he is still quite sloppy. And there was also a lot of stalling, which I don't like about the match after watching it. So that's what I thought of it.
I thought they cared more about pleasing the fans because they were wearing Braves gear, paying her to the fans.
Right. So, all right, Stevie, what rating would you give this?
To be honest, the rating I would give this, only to be fair, I'd probably give it like a 7.
Okay. Eric?
I give it a 2.
Wow. All right.
That's
low. I would give it a 5. I don't think the match
is I was
that
bored
bad.
By the match. So.
Yeah. I don't think the match was that bad. I felt like, you know, they were, you know, they did what they could. Jimmy Garvin, you know, trying to lead, you know, the match and all that. I felt like he did hold up his end of the bargain. Johnny B. Badd was still new. So with what they were given, I thought they did pretty good. So I would give it a 5. All right, next up for the World Television title, stunning Steve Austin. He would make a pretty good career for himself down the line. Good mid card.
Both guys did.
Stunning Steve Austin with Lady Blossom in his corner, defending the television title against Dustin Rhodes. 15-minute time limit draw. Eric, what'd you think of this match?
I this was actually my favorite match in the card. I mean, obviously because Steve Austin's my favorite, but I thought they were both. It was just a good brawl match. I mean, Dusty got bloodied up later on in the match. I thought it was a good result because I thought neither guy should have been pinned.
Yeah,
I liked the match.
Yeah, and Austin, you know, this is basically these time limit draws for, like, the TV title and all that. This was kind of perfect because, like, Austin would never have to, like, wouldn't have to make everybody look weak, you know, by, you know, always winning or not. Like, they would always give him an out without making him look bad, without making his challenger look bad.
Exactly.
I enjoyed the match myself. Stevie, what do you think of it?
I thought they had good chemistry.
Yeah.
After watching this, the match started slow, but it became pretty good by the end. I'm even okay with the finish because it allows the feud to continue. Like you said, there's like a time limit stipulations. You know, I never liked those time limit stipulations. It was just plain stupid. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but, like, the thing about the time limit stipulations is, like, it also gives a reason for them to have another match.
Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah, sometimes the time limits bothered me, but other times it's just like, okay, well, you know, we'll get to see the match again, so it's not going to be, you know, so, you know, we can deal with it. And the fact that both guys, you know, got blood during the match, like, that also added, like, an extra layer to it.
Yep. And they would both have good careers.
Yeah. I said, Austin would be a mid-card. You know, Dustin would do pretty good for himself, too.
Did they both move on to WF at the same time, or did Austin go first?
No, Dustin went first. Dustin was fired from WCW in March of 92, or March of 95, I mean.
Oh, wow.
Or March of 95, and Austin would be gone in probably June or July of 95.
Oh, wow. And then he became King of the Ring almost a year later.
Yeah.
And didn't take long. Wow. I didn't realize it was that short of a time where he became King of the Ring.
Yeah. So. All right. Unfortunately, next up, we have Bill Kazmaier defeating Oz by submission.
Oh.
What?
Forgot our ratings.
Oh. All right. Stevie, what would you give the TV title match?
I give it a 5.
All right. Eric?
I give it 7.5.
All right, I'm going to give it a 6.5. All right, next up, Bill Kazmaier defeated Oz by submission, 3 minutes 59 seconds, probably about 3 minutes and 20 seconds too long. Eric, what did you think of this match?
As you said, it was too long. I don't think it should have been on the card. I thought some of these matches shouldn't have been on the card, but it is what it is. It was probably the worst match in the card.
I don't know about that because we haven't gotten to the next one yet. But the thing about this match is they brought in Bill Kazmaier because he was, at that time, the world's strongest man. And
oh, wow, I didn't know it was original.
Huh?
I didn't know there was an original strongest man.
Yeah, well, no, he legitimately had the record.
Oh, okay.
He legitimately had the record of, and he was actually part of a couple of them, because I remember watching, I think it was the 2004 World's Strongest Man competition, and he actually was like a correspondent for the 2004 one for ESPN.
Oh, wow.
But WCW brought him in because, again, he's a big muscled-up guy. They thought, and, you know, Jim Herd thought, okay, you know, we could push him, possibly put him, have him do a match with Luger, you know, because they build up that him and Luger were friends. They let him use the fucking torture rack, for Christ's sake.
Oh, yeah. I saw that.
So, I mean, I didn't really like this match. I felt both guys were just, you know, they're both big guys. So just like some big man matches work, some don't. This didn't work. Stevie, what do you think of this?
No.
This was a slow and boring match between the two men who can hardly wrestle. At least, you know, if they would have put Cactus Jack in this match, it probably would have been a lot better. That's just my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, if Cactus would have been in the match, I mean, he probably would have done, you know, some crazy shit in there. He probably would have made Kazmaier look better. So I do agree with that. But unfortunately, this is what we got. Stevie, what would you rate it?
I'll give it a 4.
Okay. Eric?
I give it a 1. I'm not a fan of either guy, especially that.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to give it a 2. It you know, it was pretty bad, but not as bad as what we have coming up here. Heavy Metal Van Hammer defeated Doug Summers, 1 minute 13 seconds. Doug Summers, of course, replacing Michael Hayes. Michael Hayes was supposed to be in the match, but he faked an injury. I mean, I was a huge fan of Van Hammer when I was a kid, but he sucks. Eric, what do you think of this match?
It's, again, another match that shouldn't have been on the card. This is probably a pee break. So, yeah, this is just another boring match for a minute.
Right. And, you know, what didn't help things was the fact that when Van Hammer went for that slingshot suplex, he tried to, you know, spike Summer's head into the mat because the way he had it, you know, Summer's feet were supposed to hit the ropes first and then go back. But Van Hammer, as Doug Summers was trying to hit his feet on the ropes, Van Hammer's trying to drop him straight down. And, you know, I get it. That guy was green. He was a rookie. But this was just awful. Stevie, what do you think?
You know, my opinion is Van Hammer is not ready to be on TV. In fact, I don't think he should be, wrestling period. He nearly killed the guy. This was an awful and, like, hard to watch. You know what I mean?
No, exactly. But, like, the thing about Van Hammer was they brought him in and they said that, you know, he had gotten quite the following from, like, the young kids and all that. They were trying to turn him into the Ultimate Warrior.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's the way it seemed, because he kind of had Warrior's moveset, you know, with the shoulder tackles and all that, and the clotheslines. And the fact that he, you know, tried to make quick work of his opponents. It was very Warrior-like. But the problem is that he didn't get over.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked him when I was a kid, but now that I'm old enough watching this shit, it's just like, oh my God, this guy was shitty. Stevie, what would you rate the match?
Well, I'm probably going to give it a 3 because I didn't like it.
Eric?
I'll give it a 0 because it was a minute, 13 seconds. It wasn't even really a match.
Okay. I'm giving it a 2. Van Hammer just, he was not ready ready for the spotlight. I know they really wanted to push him, but he wasn't ready for the spotlight yet, and Doug Summers has seen better days. All right, up next, the light heavyweight title is on the line here, the vacant light heavyweight title. You know, they're going to crown the first champion. Flyin' Brian defeated Richard Morton of the Ark Foundation with Alexandra York in the corner. 12 minutes, 45 seconds. Brian Pillman is the first ever WCW light heavyweight champion. First question I got to ask you, Eric, is what did you think of that referee camera that Nick Patrick was wearing on his head?
I was like, what the hell was he wearing? A helmet? What was that about?
That it was something weird that they were trying.
Oh, okay.
Because they did it for they did it for the Chamber of Horrors too.
You know,
I didn't notice that one.
To have a it's a stupid idea to have a referee cam. Don't you think?
Yeah. I really didn't like it. I mean, it was okay for the Chamber of Horrors because there was so much stupid shit going on that it just made sense, but not for a title match.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, especially the first title match, especially the first ever title match. I mean, first for the title, that title.
Right. But Eric, stupid-ass camera aside, what did you think of the match?
I thought the match was solid. I mean, you got two legends in the ring. You got Richard Martin from the, Midnight, Rock and Roll Express. Did I get that right? Yeah.
Yeah,
and
you got Flying Brian.
We all know he's a legend. I mean, rest in peace to him. I thought it was a solid match. It was the right amount of time for the match, and I thought it was good. They kicked off the triple threat main event with 3 straight title matches.
Well, not 3 straight title matches.
Oh, no,
you had Halloween Phantom in between. But
yeah, I forgot that. But you know my point.
Yeah. But no, I actually thought this match was very good. I mean, I think it was slow at points, but Richard Morton did a real good job of, you know, controlling the pace, and he worked really well as a heel. I thought. So, Stevie, what did you think of the match?
This match was too slow. I expected way more from these two wrestlers. The finish was nice, but they already lost me before that point. But however, you know, Jim Ross mentioned during the match that just Jushin Thunder Liger wants to face the winner, and that will be a way better match. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha. All right, Stevie, what would you rate it then?
Well, I'll give it a 4.
Huh? All right, Eric?
I'll give it a...
Or go ahead, Stevie.
I'll give it a 6. Oh, sorry, Stevie.
I'll probably give it a 5. I'll give it a 5.
All right. And Eric, you're going to give it a 6?
Yes, sir.
All right. I'm going to agree with you. I'm going to give it a 6 myself. I thought it was a good match. I thought, you know, I was happy that they were giving Brian a championship finally. And yeah. All right, next matchup, the mysterious WCW Halloween Phantom defeats the Z-Man. 1 minute, 27 seconds. Eric, what did you think?
Again, another match that was short-lived, probably right. Nothing much to say. I thought it was not okay, but it was whatever. It was just another in-between match to break up the title matches, I guess.
Okay, so I'm going to defend this because you have a guy coming in, and obviously we're going to see what they do with the guy later on with the Phantom. But I think to get him in, to bring him in and make him look dominant, this is what you had to do.
Squash match, yeah.
Okay. Now, did it, you know, make sense for it to be against a guy who, you know, is not necessarily one of the main baby faces, but he's like one of the main, like, mid-card baby faces? Probably not. I mean, that just shows you, though, like, what they thought of the Z-Man at that time. But no, I thought that this was the right move. Now, can anybody tell who this was right away?
I already knew who it was. I mean, even when he did the finisher, it was obvious it was Rick Rude.
Yeah. But yeah, so, all right, Stevie, what did you think of this match?
This was nothing but a quick squash kind of a match. I mean, it's a storyline, the setup, the later reveal, but the finisher made it pretty obvious who it is.
Right.
So I thought it was okay.
Eric, what were you gonna say?
Oh, I didn't realize it was Rick Rude.
Well, they would reveal it later.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, at the time when I watched it.
Right. Okay. Stevie, what would you rate it?
Well, I'll probably give it maybe like a 5.
Okay. Eric?
I'll give it a 4.
All right. I'm going to give it a 5 myself. I thought it was done well. To, you know, get the Phantom over, make him look dominant, and which is what you have to do, especially with the reveal you're going to have later.
Yeah, that's a thing later, waiting for the future.
Right. So, all right, next up, the United States Tag Team Champions, the Patriots. Todd Champion of Firebreaker Chip challenged the Enforcers, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko. The Enforcers... for the WCW World Tag Team titles, the Enforcers win. 9 minutes, 51 seconds. Eric, what did you think of this match?
I thought it was a solid tag team match. We got two legends in Arn Anderson and Larry Zbyszko. And then you got Patriots, who were tag champion, and Fireburn Chip. I thought it was a solid match. I thought it got the right amount of time. And the right team won.
And, well, yeah, the right team won. And to be honest with you, for as little ability as Chip and Todd had, they carried their end of the bargain. Todd sold really well. And the enforcers made those two guys actually look pretty good. Stevie,
yeah,
what'd you
think? That's why they're legends.
Exactly. Stevie, what'd you think?
After watching it, I thought it was surprisingly solid because I wasn't expecting much from the Patriots, but they didn't look that bad either.
Yeah. Well, they were in there with the right team. That's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole match was solid.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely
probably
agree.
Better of the two tag team matches.
Yeah. Definitely. Because, like, the Patriots... Again, the Patriots, they weren't really that good, but if you put them in there with the right team, or the right guys, like, they could make stuff happen. So,
exactly.
And that's what they did. Stevie, what would you rate this match?
I'm going to have to give it, I'll probably give it a 7.
Okay. Eric?
I'll give it 6.5.
All right, I'm gonna give it just a straight 6. I thought it was a decent match. You know, Patriot and Todd, Todd and Chip, obviously, again, nothing really special about them, but when they're in there with the right opponent, they can carry themselves very well. Up next, we have Eric Bischoff interviewing Paulie Dangerously and Medusa. The storyline is that Paul was suspended by WCW. He was taken off of TV, and he was pissed. And he was bringing in people, or he said he was gonna, you know, start something that was gonna bankrupt the whole company. He was gonna tear down WCW brick by brick. Now, in reality, here's what happened. The USWA in Memphis wanted to work with WCW, and WCW was okay with it, or WCW was kind of, pondering the idea. And one of the things they wanted to do was they wanted to send Jerry Lawler to work a bunch of title matches with Luger. And Paul E. Dangerously, you know, Paul Heyman to most of us, stooged this off to Eddie Gilbert, who was technically still with Memphis at the time, but afterwards he would actually leave and go to the GWF. So Heyman told Eddie Gilbert about it. And because he could not keep his mouth shut, WCW decided to suspend him. Well, then Paul came up with this idea that he was going to form this group, or like Dusty, or, you know, he talked to Dusty about it. Dusty thought it was a good idea. They wanted to turn it into a storyline, so here we are. WCW Phantom comes out. Medusa unmasks him. It's Ravishing Rick Rude. Everybody's stunned. He cuts this promo on Sting. I thought it was very well done. Eric, what did you think?
Yes, it was. I thought it was a good reveal. I thought this is a good young Paul Heyman, as we know now. I thought the guy they revealed was pretty good. Obviously, yeah. Rick Rude.
All right, Stevie, what did you think?
from watching it, I thought it was a solid interview. I pretty much thought it was solid. I mean, it definitely. I'm just gonna put it as pretty much solid. I liked the whole interview, to be perfectly honest.
Okay.
Not too long, not too short.
Right. Exactly. All right. Here we are. Main event time. 2 out of 3 falls. Mr. Hughes is barred from ringside. You have Ron Simmons with Dusty Rhodes in his corner challenging world champion Lex Luger with Harley Race in his corner. Luger wins 2 falls to 1. Simmons wins the first fall. Luger wins the second fall by DQ and then wins the third fall. The match altogether goes 18 minutes, 59 seconds. Eric, what did you think?
I thought the build-up to the match was cool. I thought the promo they did with Ron Simmons really got me hyped for the match. I thought that underdog story, kind of, it would have been his first title, right? Ron Simmons?
Yeah.
That was the, yeah, so they built it up that
now
way.
Now, he would become champion a year later.
Okay. I thought it was a good, solid storyline, the way they built it up, especially with the promo before the match. And the match itself, I thought it was solid. I thought the first fall was good. I didn't like the ending in the second, but it is, I mean, Lex Luger was heel, so he had to end it that way. And then I was surprised Lex Luger actually won. I thought Ron Simmons was going to win the way they were building it up. So I was actually surprised.
Well, Ron Simmons actually broke his wrist during the match.
Oh, okay. Was he supposed to win, or did they change the
I'm not sure. I don't think he was supposed to win, because I think they were trying to run, because they wanted to get Luger versus Sting.
Oh, okay. Personally, I thought the wrong guy won, especially with the way they built it up. But that's just from watching it for the first time.
Right. No, I can understand that. But, yeah, they wanted to get Luger versus Sting. Well, there was a few Luger matches they wanted to do. Like, they wanted to do Luger and Sting. They wanted to do Luger and Rick Steiner.
Yeah, Savage? Yeah.
No, Macho Man wasn't there yet, right?
Oh, okay. My bad.
Luger and Sting, Luger and Rick Steiner. I think they wanted to do Luger and Bill Kazmaier still, which I don't know why.
And Big Vader?
No, because Vader was managed by the same guy Luger was managed by.
Oh, duh.
I mean, I thought it was a good match. I thought the second fall, I mean, you really didn't want to make Ron drop 2 falls in a row. So they had to do what they had to do to keep Ron looking strong.
Exactly.
So, all right, Stevie, what did you think of this match?
After watching it, the match started hot, but it slowed way down. The finish was okay, but it wasn't that thrilling. This match, you know, ended up falling flat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I can see why he said that. It did kind of fall flat in the end. The way that he ended it, I thought it was going to be more dramatic than that.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I can understand that. All right, Stevie, what's your rating for this match?
To be fair, I would give this rating a 5.
Okay. Eric?
I give it a 6.5. I thought it was in between a slightly above average.
Okay. I'm going to give it
a
7. I'm going to give it a 7. I thought it was really good. I mean, I could see where, you know, Eric, you would think that the wrong guy won. I think, though, because of what they were trying to build to with Sting, I can understand it. All right. All right, Eric, final thoughts and a rating of the entire of the show overall.
Besides this, besides like three or four matches on the card, I thought it was a solid pay-per-view. I enjoyed it for what it was. I give the pay-per-view a solid 7.
All right. Stevie, final thoughts and an overall rating of the show.
Okay, I'm not nearly as negative about the show as some people are, but that's not to say it was great. There were enough decent stuff and the steps in the right direction for me not to hate it. So I'll probably give it a 7.
Okay. All right. I used to watch this show a lot when I was a kid, but that's just because we taped it on VHS. So I've seen this show 100 times. I like the show. I mean, yes, there's a lot. There is some bad stuff on here, but to me, like, there are a couple of really good matches on here that outweigh the bad. So I'm gonna give it a 7.5. I thought it was a good show. It wasn't WCW's best show, obviously. It wasn't their best Halloween Havoc, but it was a decent effort.
Would you say it was their best show in 91?
I'm not sure because I wouldn't say that because they did Wrestle War earlier in the year, and that had like War Games matches, or I think one of the greatest War Games matches ever, only to be outdone by the War Games match the following year.
Okay. We didn't review that one yet. Yeah, did we?
No.
Okay.
But, I don't think it was their best show of 91, but I do think it was a decent effort.
Yes, it was. And as you said, the good outweighs the bad.
Yeah. I think so. All right.
I agree with that.
All right. With that being said, this was Halloween Havoc 1991. Stevie, Eric, thank you for joining me here. We'll see everybody tomorrow night for Unscripted Unlimited and the 32-tune tournament. And we'll see which cartoon comes out on tap. And then
Scaredy Cat on Sunday.
And Scaredy Cat's on Sunday, yep. All right, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Later, right, Stevie. Later, Doug.
Later, guys.